Hello, my loves, and welcome to the Vibrant Voice Podcast. My name is Killian, first of my name, fuzzy of leg, and breaker of shames, sociolinguthusiast, vibrant vegantress, compassionate creatrix, and I think my close friends would find me remiss for not including humble hag slash crone, because I've definitely got that wise old lady energy sometimes mixed with the warmth of a fresh baked grandma's cookie. Yes, I am making a SpongeBob reference. So yeah, I'll add that one to my list of titles going forward. And truly, I still feel like I'm missing some. I've less so chosen these titles and more so feel like they've chosen me, especially Breaker of Shames. I feel like I was put on a path that showed me the pattern of breaking through shame over and over, confronting social expectations and the things I expected of myself along the way. And I'm honestly most proud of being the breaker of shames. If I had to narrow things down and only pick one of the many identities I've come to claim as my own, that would probably be the one that I would, well, that I would at least carry with the most pride. Yeah, that's how I feel about that. Because something big happened when I broke through shame for the very first time in the biggest way that I sort of marked in my life of like, oh, wow, this was a turning point. And that's what this topic is going to be on today, is the thing that I broke through, which isn't just shame, but is a very particular kind of experience that has shame at its core. And since most of us find it very hard to identify the emotions that are living within the big experiences that all of us humans tend to share, in that we go through the same things at different times in our lives, I want to introduce this topic with the intention to make sure we're connecting it back to shame. So everyone listening understands that whether you're going through it now or you remember this episode in the future, you know that it's shame that we're dealing with here. And I keep hitting my lamp because I'm gesticulating to no one. I'm just like waving my hands. I'm a wild hand talker and I'm gesticulating to no one. And I'm slapping the lamp over here. So let me just get that. Okay. So this experience that I'm going to talk about in this episode is what I like to call the fear of being found out. Yeah. You may have had a visceral reaction to seeing it as the title of this episode, and you might feel like, oh, I already know what this is about, to some extent when you hear that. But it's funny because there are a couple of different interpretations of this, I think. So one is, it's definitely an experience that I know many gay, trans, and queer folks feel all the time. Let's just like say what it is. You know, some people call it being found out. Some people call it coming out, or, you know, other people dragging them out of the closet. Dragging. Oh God, that's such a, okay. I can't get distracted. Just because the drag ban and all of that stuff is happening right now doesn't mean that my brain can go off onto another topic. ADHD brain, I'm going to need you to stay on track here. Okay. All right. Okay. So we're talking about the fear of being found out. Okay. And the fear of someone finding out who they really are, a gay person or somebody who doesn't feel like themselves and dissociates from themselves, the fear of someone finding out who they really are, and not only before they get a chance to come out in a safe way and choose how they, you know, are found out, but maybe even having a fear of like being yanked out before they've fully understood exactly what the thing that they don't quite know about themselves even is yet. Because like I literally just said, we're not always sure what we're going through and feeling. Especially because we've been trained to intellectualize things, but also if we don't have mentors and role models to guide us and help us sort things out. I mean, most of our caretakers and mentors and role models like taught us to intellectualize things. And they were taught that the world is a logical one and that, you know, using your brain instead of, you know, listening to your emotions is the best way to interpret things. And we might even have, you know, role models and guides and mentors who did the reverse. They may have been people that criticized and bullied us out of our shells, out of our safe zones, and made us face things before we felt ready. So we might have had nobody, or we might have had two people that were just like pushing us around and making us feel like I can't just be myself at the time that I feel like I at the time and place and at the pace that I am ready to accept myself. Growing up, it is hard. But if you don't understand the queer experience, and like I said, there are many interpretations of the fear of being found out, you very likely still understand what it means to feel the fear of being found out. And I realized this because the gay and trans experience came to me first. I mean, when I was telling people about like coming out as somebody with herpes years ago, I was like, I can't use coming out because that's not my thing. Like I can't take that thing. I have to, you know, I have to really find a different language to own and claim because it's not the same thing. It's not necessarily the same thing. So like I already had those two interpretations in mind, but when I said the title of this episode to my partner and I just like mentioned it to him, he immediately winced, like viscerally was like, ugh, and nodded and said to me that he feels that way all the time. And I was like, what? It was surprising to me because when I first wrote, you know, the title for this episode, I knew I was referring to my herpes experience. And for me, you know, even in the months after I, let's say, the experience that I had of like not shaving anymore in the months after that, while I was still trying to like not offend anybody with my body hair, or even the time that I got my first real tattoo and I was hiding it from my mom. And like years ago, we were going on an 11-day trip across the US and we were road tripping together. And as I was packing my clothes, I felt that fear so distinctly. There are just like certain experiences that I was just like, these feel like secrets. These feel like, you know, things that just, you know, they feel like secrets being held. And I'm like, how is my partner feeling this all the time? Like, is he hiding secrets all the time? Like, what's going on? And when I asked him, he said that he felt the fear of being discovered as a fraud and being found out. And I was like, oh, it's imposter syndrome, which, you know, a lot of people fear and is amazing for him and for many of the other people that I've spoken with who resonate with imposter syndrome because, you know, you might resonate with this if you're like, oh yeah, imposter syndrome is a thing for me is my partner is a dog trainer who's been doing this work for nearly a decade. And he's still worried that people are going to think he doesn't know what he's doing. And that's how so many people feel who have imposter syndrome. It's like, I've been doing this for way too long for how little I actually know. And it translates to the fear that, you know, people with imposter syndrome will be found out that they don't actually know what they're doing because that's what they honestly believe. Is that after all this time, you know, people like my partner feel the need to hide that there are still a few small gaps in their knowledge or because they don't want to let anyone down. and they don't want anyone to like rat them out and keep people from paying them to do the things that they love and are super passionate about. I mean, like, he would probably be devastated if he couldn't do dog training anymore, if he felt like, you know, his reputation had been spoiled. And I think that's what, you know, a lot of people are concerned about. And I know that those people are also perfectionists. And I know a lot of recovering perfectionists, which is why I say this, who have imposter syndrome, including many of my friends and clients, my partner, like I said, myself being a recovering perfectionist. I know where that imposter syndrome comes from. And it's because there's this lack of confidence that propels perfectionists. Say that five times fast. Propels perfectionists. Nope, I'm not going to do it. To do what a lot of people say to do. A lot of people tell everybody to do. Everybody all the time, which is to fake it till you make it. Just fake it till you make it. You'll be fine. Just fake it till you make it. Because the worry is, if you're honest about not trusting in yourself, which is the very definition of confidence, is trusting in yourself, then how can others trust you? You know, if you're honest about that, if you tell anybody, I don't know that I trust myself, how is anybody else going to trust in you? And if you need to ask for help because there are gaps in your knowledge, then aren't you just as valuable as an unpaid intern or an amateur in your field? Because you weren't the one who knew the answers and had to go and bother someone else to get them. I mean, yeah, perfectionism is a breeding ground for the kind of insecurity that grows where there is a shamefulness in not knowing everything. And like the horror fantasy there that spawns from that is an unsafe world where we're harboring the dark secret of not believing in ourselves. So I guess it is, I mean, in a way, you know, the fear of being found out is always sort of secretive. But it's for people who have that perfectionist tendency that provokes, you know, an imposter syndrome in them. There is also sort of like this nightmarish way that they develop this outer suit, this outer skin suit that they put on every day, which is the rugged individualism that we use to look intimidating and standoffish and like we know what we're doing and like we don't need any help, to keep other people from even questioning whether we've got this, so no one looks too closely and sees that under the skin, we're sweating profusely, we're shaking, we're fidgeting, we're nervous, we're anxious, we're stressed. Simply because we want others to be pleased with our results. We want to please other people. We want others to see the parts that we want to show them, the parts we think are good and helpful to others, while making sure that they don't see, and in fact could never find, that we think the parts that we think would displease them. And I say we think to the parts that would displease them because there is no world that actually exists where everyone is displeased or pleased by the same exact things, right? That's ridiculous to even, I mean, it's silly. The premise of it is silly. And it's also how I can always tell when there's someone who kind of believes that, because I can always tell when someone's sweating, when they're hiding their imposter syndrome and they're fawning with the pretense that they would just rather do everything themselves. It's fine. I've got it. This is how it's always been. I really don't have time to delegate, or whatever excuses they may have when I see them over there fucking floundering, because it genuinely displeases me when I see that and I see people without the confidence to believe in themselves. They've had years of experience. Like, here's your confidence, baby. So I'm very sidetrack. I'm like such a big sister with this kind of thing. I have such big sister energy when it comes to this kind of thing, because I always see it and immediately inundate people with compliments about how well they're doing and how hard they're trying and how I can see them doing their best with what they've got. And then in that deluge, I try to also flood them with things like, but you don't have to do it alone. And wow, looks like this one thing is stressing you out. Is there someone who you can ask for help? And it makes sense. You wouldn't know everything because nobody possibly could. And it's cool to take a break and give yourself time to reflect before moving on. And just a thousand little reminders that perfection is an unrealistic goal because it's an impossible one. And I think that was Tony Robbins that said something along those lines. Like, if I see someone stressed out by something that they're burdening themselves with, I will make it my last dying wish to see them unburdened. I'll do my best, my absolute best to boost their booty, to boost that confidence and get them to see more clearly just how they're hurting their own chances at whatever outcome they really desire, because they're not using all their resources wisely, because they're trying to be so perfect that they don't need anybody else. And they're trying so hard not to explicitly say, I don't know, I'll look into it, out loud in front of anybody else. Because the fear of being found out as a fraud is so much bigger than us. It comes from this, like, this belief that society sets standards that we then all have to follow. You know, the fear of being found out as a fraud is about setting standards for ourselves that we think society has expectations for. But proving to ourselves that we know what we're doing, and by proxy, finding the pathway away from insecurity and back to self-confidence, requires the opposite from us. It requires instead that we set standards that feel possible for us as individuals and our own true nature, our own strengths, and the things we know we can trust ourselves to do with excellence, or at least with great passion and care. Because even if you don't know that you can do it with excellence, if you are passionate about it and you really care, you are going to try your dang hardest. And that is all that really matters. And once we do that, and once we set standards around just those things, then we can hold ourselves to different expectations that come from that. It's the social expectations that do us in. It's the fear of feeling ashamed that we didn't live up to this invisible thing no one is actually ever really holding us accountable to, that we're so constantly in fear of. Oh, hey, quick reminder to drink some water. Have you done that today? Do you have any water nearby? While you go grab some and take a few glugs, I'd love to invite you to a perfection intervention. For those of us who became perfect to please other people, or who don't know any other way to get things done, it can feel kind of suffocating to approach everything and everyone as though it's a problem to solve. And you just gotta figure out the right answer to fixing it. This can leave you spinning around, chasing your tail, anxious all the time, and constantly disappointed by the results. It can even make any new changes that happen in your life feel like a blindside, knock you out of the little momentum you might have had and dysregulate your system for days, weeks, while you figure out how to process your new reality. That shit, what I call the identity split, is the worst. Because when your inner perfectionist is always bumping up against imperfection, you might just collapse in on yourself, feeling lost, disoriented, overwhelmed. Ah, I mean, the feels, how they do go on, which is why I created The Wandering. The Wandering is an intimate guided experience that will have you visualizing a new way of being that you can see clearly, forming questions and answers that lack that all too familiar sense of urgency, and will also have you coming home to yourself, feeling safe enough to slow down, make mistakes, and take more chances on yourself and the vibrant life you're in the process of realigning with. Now, there are only 5 spots available each month because I value the intimacy of this space. So be sure to reserve a spot if this sounds like something your heart knows it needs. Head to vforvibrant.com and click The Wandering to check it out. You finished that glass of water yet? Okay. Good. Good. Let's get back to it. Okay. You've hydrated yourself. Yes. You've taken a couple breaths. Yes. Okay. Now we're going to talk about the flip side of the fear of being found out right now. Because on the flip side, like I said before, there's another version, another perspective on the fear of being found out that really punched me in the gut and that I hope resonates with some of you. Not that I'm here trying to inflict violence upon anyone. Like, I don't want y'all to feel punched in the gut, but it may feel a little bit that way. So just, you know, love yourself through it and hydrate yourself through it and deep breath yourself through it and disengage if you need to. I love you so much. But shame is a hard topic and it can feel traumatic to talk about the identities and experiences that we've hidden from the world out of a fear of being seen, because being known for who we truly are has sort of forced us into isolation sometimes. And that's why there's trauma there. For sure there's trauma there. To ground this in research, there have been many studies which have shown that it's not the intensity of the experiences we go through that causes deep trauma wounds, but it's the amount of connection we feel during those experiences. So especially feeling alone, left out, or even intentionally self-isolating can be the greatest factor in whether or not those kind of moments in our lives where we try to be true and honest and show ourselves are traumatic or are connective. So I shared with you my tattoo story, and that played out. And to give you a little more detail, I was supposed to go on this big long trip with my mom, and I ended up packing all of these clothes, and I think I started but didn't stop this, but didn't finish the painting the picture here of, like, I was packing clothes for this trip that would hide my tattoo. And it's on my upper back on the left side, like on my shoulder blade, essentially on my left shoulder blade. So like, I couldn't wear spaghetti straps. It was the summer when we were traveling. I could not wear spaghetti straps or like anything that, you know, exposed me. I had to stay covered up. So I thought this was my plan for how I would hide it from my mom. And I think that played out very quickly, because by that time in my life, I was already very fed up with having to hide myself. I was in my early 20s, I think 23 at the time, and just did not want to have to remember every day to change in private so my mom wouldn't see my tattoo or feel afraid that she would see it and we would have to deal with the fallout. Because in case it wasn't apparent by the fact that I felt the need to hide anything from my mother, she did not like tattoos. I'll just make that clear. She told me and my sister as often as she could how ugly she thought tattoos were and how she would hate it if we got any, and just made it very clear to us that that was a taboo subject for our family. Tattoos were taboos, and taboo things are not just off limits. It's like they only exist if we're talking about them in a criticizing way. They only exist to criticize them or make it clear how much we hate that taboo thing. So I was afraid. I was afraid to be found out. And the day before we were scheduled to leave, I showed her the tattoo and got it the fuck over with. Ripped the Band-Aid off. And it was not pretty, the reaction I got. But for sure, it made me feel better, because then I didn't have to hide the entire time and hold this knot of tension that had been building up in my stomach from all of the waiting for the other shoe to drop about something that I love and that matters to me, my tattoo, being criticized and hated by a person that I love and who matters to me, my mom. You can see just by that small interaction and just by my sigh there. It happened years ago. It happened 10 years ago now. You can see just by that small reaction and that interaction, something that has zero effect on my mom's life. Just zero. Completely no effect on her life at all. None. None effect on her life at all. Just how conditioned I was to be afraid to tell her those kind of things anyway. Even though it didn't, you know, it wasn't something that, you know, should have been so material that I couldn't tell her or tell my parents things that were no-no'd or even completely ignored throughout my life. But I was conditioned to be afraid to tell them about these things and to feel like here comes the criticism, here comes the judgment. So you could probably see the connection in how my experience with the topic of sex, which was either ignored in my household, shunned by way of my parents fast-forwarding through sex scenes or changing the channel completely. This was back in the days of cable TV before Netflix. For those of you who don't realize, you can change the channel, that there are channels that exist. But you know, it was a topic that was no-no'd, and it made me literally scared, scarred even, too scarred and scared to seek help and support and connection from my parents after my herpes diagnosis. I felt very lost, and I felt some big feelings. And the little things that, you know, were just like, you know, I don't ever want to see your tattoos, or I don't, you know, ever want to talk about this with you, or not that they necessarily would say things like that, but just the reaction to it, they were just a lot of little things that really led to some big fallout, big feelings that made me feel alone in the world of sex. And so it became a trauma-ridden realm of understanding, or actually misunderstanding for me, because even into my 30s, the reason that I ended up getting pregnant when I didn't want to was from a misunderstanding around sex that I hadn't communicated with my partner, because there was still, after all this time, so much shame wrapped up in that taboo. And it may have seemed like such a small thing to the people who raised me to shame me for touching myself when I was younger, and shame me for acting on sexual desires as I got older, or even as recently as just a few months ago, say ew to my face when they asked about my polyamorous lifestyle. But all those things became big. All those little things amounted to something big for me. They added up, especially if they're things that I wanted to connect with my parents about. So when I was diagnosed with herpes, I walked out of the gyno thinking how incredibly alone I was and would have to be. The assumption I made immediately, based on how I'd been conditioned to think about the topic of sex in my body, was that no one would want to talk with me about it. I started in that moment carrying with me the fear of being found out. I had something to hide then. At that moment, something heavy that I had to smother from then on was also something that I felt was smothering me. And even worse, I think, than the fear of being found out, which is already so scary. You just feel like you're running and you're like, you're just hiding all the time. I mean, it's just like a life or death in your mind version of hide and seek. It really is. Worse than the fear of being found out and someone discovering somehow that I had herpes was the fear of never being discovered, actually. Because while I felt like I couldn't possibly ask anyone to hold space for this thing that was in reality very small, since so many fucking people have herpes. I mean, like, everyone has herpes. It's just like 1 in 3 people at this point. If you know somebody with a cold sore, that's fucking herpes. And the person they're fucking probably has herpes now. It's just like, it's a thing, okay? So it's a very small thing. It was a very small thing to the gyno who told me, which is why they told me so just like blatantly uncaring and like, oh yeah, this is so normal. But for me, truly, to me, it felt like such a big thing because I had never met anybody who had it. I had not been educated on it. And the way that the topic was treated when I was growing up was of such a hush-hush that I started harboring, you know, not just the fear of being found out about it and not ever finding anybody who would hold space for all of these big feelings I was feeling, but I was also starting to harbor resentment that nobody was gonna ask, that nobody would notice how I was quietly hurting, that nobody saw me in that place of suffering. I was afraid that I would never be found in that place where I hid my true self. And I was sad. I was deeply sad that everyone around me, who at the time it was like post-college and like I was hiding a lot of things about myself at that time because after a big death in the family and a breakup and a friend breakup that happened, I mean, it was just like there was a lot going on. You know, the people around me thought that the performance of happiness and fun and joy that they saw me doing was the real thing. I have to assume because nobody was ever like, hey, you kind of like on the DL, like seem a little bit sad. What's going on? There was never any like, you know, space between, you know, we're having fun together and wow, you're drinking a lot. Or wow, it kind of seems like, you know, every time we try to get vulnerable, it feels hard for you. What is that like for you? There was none of that. So then at that time, it felt like the only thing I wanted was to deny I had herpes forever. But in reality, in hindsight, I can see that it competed with the very human desire to connect, to be seen, heard, understood. Oh gosh, those are some of the best feelings in the world. To be worshipped in the fullness of my glory and my grotesque. Oh, chef's kiss. What I wanted more than anything, and what I was also vehemently terrified of, was to be found out. And I really wanted to focus one of the episodes here on the Vibrant Voice solely on this feeling and this experience, because I know there are people out there now who, like me at that time, think that there's no one who wants to see them. No one who is willing to open themselves so you can be open too, who will understand you. And worse, no one who will want to take the time to see you without judgment and hear your story and hold you in your pain and connect with you in the most vulnerable way possible. In my experience, you may not find someone who is willing to be that safe place for you amongst the people that you want that safety and support from the most, if you understand what I'm saying, but you will be able to come to shore. Stop swimming so hard out in the ocean of your unworthiness. Head hardly above water. I felt like I was drowning at the time, barely holding on to the hope that you'll get to return to normal one day. I promise you will find your beach that you can finally come to rest on. If you trust yourself enough to trust one other person in your life with that heavy feeling. Because for them, it may take the weight off of their chest too. Many of the people I've disclosed to, for instance, were also hiding that they have herpes. I've been told so many times just how I don't know if I can disclose this on my podcast, but I was so told somebody very close to me that they had herpes, and I was like, what? What? I told them and they were like, me too. And I was like, what? I've been told so many times just how freeing it was even to hear me say my status out loud, because it allowed someone else to see that I had become the shoreline upon which they could beach up, dry off, and feel safe again. And that's not to say that if you're going through something that weighs on you, that you should think of how it's going to help other people for you to unburden yourself. But what I'm saying is this what I'm actually saying? Okay. Quote this part, okay? I'm always like, oh shit, people are going to take things out of context. No, quote this part. Society's perfectionist standards that you think you need to live up to are the standards that everyone else is following too. And it's hurting all of us. It's trapping us in shame and ensuring that we stop ourselves from sharing our whole hearts, our whole selves. The expectations we all think we have of each other based on the social standards that none of us signed up for tend to fall away when we're genuine with each other, when we're tender enough to say, I can't hold this all by myself any longer, and I don't want to. That's the moment when a bond with your trauma becomes a human bond, a connection with love that was impossible to reach from our islands out in the middle of nowhere. It's like we're all on like all of these tiny little islands out at sea and we can't reach each other. So if you're swimming now, just know you will see your lighthouse. Trust yourself when you feel that someone could be your lighthouse, your person that you can swim to. Trust that you will find them very soon. And if you've been that safe space for someone else, just know that you deserve the same when you need it. You deserve to feel at home in your wholeness too, in the moments when you feel like you're lost at sea. Because I know that so many of us who have been there for others are just like that strong place ashore and, you know, have sort of this feeling of like, I can't ever show any cracks in my strength because I have to be there for others. No, if you are feeling lost too, you deserve your own safe, supportive shoreline. Okay. All right. Do you believe me? If you don't believe me, I would love for you to just say to yourself right now, I would love to believe that I am deserving of whatever is hard for you to believe right now, okay? I would love to believe that I am deserving of. Is that it? Did you do it? Okay. All right, good. Okay. So for everyone who has been enveloped by the fear of being found out, which I think is most of us, I think is all of us at some point in our lives, at different points in our lives, whether it was a secret or imposter syndrome, I encourage you to do at least one thing for yourself going forward. And that is to find a safe place within yourself. And it might feel like creating a safe place within yourself if it's the first time that you're doing it, but genuinely, it's always been there. It's already there. You just have to like have somebody lead you to it sometimes. Because one of the hardest things to go through when you're feeling alone is feeling like even you are your own critic, your own worst critic, a source of humiliation and judgment. And that makes the whole experience that much worse. And I know this feeling well too, of not just feeling too much shame to come out of hiding and say I need help, love, and compassionate support, but telling myself that I don't deserve it, that I should be able to get over it on my own and solve my emotional issues like they're math problems with one-to-one perfect answers that I'm supposed to be able to figure out. I've been my own bully. And I recognized at some point that my inner world felt just as unsafe as my outer one. So no matter where you're at right now, you could probably use a kinder inner world, right? Somewhere within yourself that you can return to with confidence, knowing it'll always be there to comfort you and remind you that you don't need the right answers. You just need to allow yourself to be here right now. Yeah. You might want to affirm that too. You might want to pause that and affirm that too. I want to believe that I'm deserving of a place of confidence and comfort within myself so that I don't need to always be searching for the right answers. I want to believe that I can just allow myself to be where I'm at in any given moment. With peace. With peace. That is the intention. Those are the intentions behind the wandering, which you've probably heard a little pitch for in the middle of this episode already. but I wanted to really come back to it because this episode, this topic in particular, really feels like something that resonates with that idea of needing to be guided back home to a safe place within yourself. Because when you're on the island in the middle of the ocean, you need a boat. You need to not just like be out there like waiting for somebody to rescue you and hoping that you'll bump up on shore at some point, but you need a boat that you can pull yourself into when you realize that you're in that isolated, scary, too big to handle all by yourself place again. Because you will get there again. We circle back on the shame spiral over and over throughout our lives. So this is a tool that we need for the long term. And I've actually got what someone said from the last wandering that makes me laugh, aside from, fuck yes, holy shit, I loved it, it was amazing to find that place inside of me, to go from a place of profound frustration and anger to profound relief and this lack of urgency. And that's really, I think, what we kind of feel in that fear of being found out is this urgency of like, oh shit, I really have to make sure that I keep running, that I keep hiding really well so that nobody finds me. And I think if that's something that you have struggled with or that you are struggling with now, that the wandering is something that would be great for you. So I encourage you to sign up for at least one wandering in the course of your life so that you can get the resources that have helped me and so many recovering perfectionists and lost souls find their way back home to themselves and discover that they want to be seen, heard, embraced in their wholeness without needing to be perfect or right before that happens. There are only 4 spots available in each one because the intimate experience calls for an intimate group, which I love. And also because I give card readings at the end and want everyone there to really get the most out of the experience. I don't like rushing. I like to give everybody the messages that are coming through. So if you're feeling called to that, head to my website, vforvibrant.com, and check out when the next one is happening. And I thank you from the depths of my fucking soul, where I used to hide away, hoping both to be seen and unseen, for listening to this episode. I thank you from that place because giving yourself the time to receive this message is a big deal. I know it may have pulled at some heartstrings and some attachments to people or experiences that have been hard for you to live with, and I am so proud of you for making it through, especially if this was a hard episode for you. If you loved this, come on back now, you hear? I mean, just, you know, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to it, because I'm up on Spotify too. So, you know, if you want to make sure that like you get to see it all the time because you'd be listening to Spotify, then do that. And be sure to follow me on Instagram or subscribe to my website email so that you can stay updated and get all of the everything that I create out of compassion and curiosity and kindness and a desire to connect on a level that's so much more powerful, more vibrant than the way we've been taught connection and kindness looks and feels. I want us to relearn the meaning of those words so we can treat ourselves better, but also become closer to each other, warmed by the witnessing of one another in our wholeness. I believe we deserve it. And I believe the 7 generations that come behind us deserve this too. And babe, I believe you deserve all the love you desire. And if that's hard for you to believe, I hope that you take a second now to just say out loud, I want to believe that I deserve all the love I desire. Try it on. And no, just believe in me when I say that I know that you are deserving. And that you also deserve to have a beautiful, wonderful rest of your day. Mwah.